Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, July 23rd. If you go back to work or go shopping in a store and then you get sick with the coronavirus, who's to blame? And who should be legally liable? You know, one of Mitch McConnell's top priorities for any new coronavirus relief bill, as they debate this in Congress now, is shielding companies from many of the lawsuits that might be filed against them for inadequate precautions leading to people getting COVID. You've heard that, right? And locally, a bill in the New York State Senate is aimed at the same thing. So what's the right place for the line to be drawn? Because really, it's not all or nothing in most cases. Should certain good faith precautions be required to shield companies from lawsuits? What are the lessons from other kinds of risks where people can be sued? Joining me now to pick apart the details is an expert in this field, professor of law at Georgetown University, Heidi Lee Feldman. Professor Feldman, welcome to WNYC.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Professor Feldman, what's the starting point? Who's liable today if someone, let's say, gets coronavirus at work?
Well, of course, in my professor capacity, I say it's not so simple as just that question makes it sound. It depends on whether you can prove that your particular case was caused by conditions at your workplace. That's really important to note, because the baseline in tort law, which is what, you know, which is what you asked me about, mm-hmm. is that plaintiffs bear the burden of proof. In other words, it's their job to, in the first instance, prove against any particular defendant, a store, a employer, that not only was the defendant careless in the way they handled the their operations in light of COVID-19, but they also have to show that their particular case was caused in that setting. For most cases, that's going to be difficult to prove given the out-of-control spread of the virus in the U.S. Even in New York, where it's more under control, if it's circulating anywhere other than at a particular workplace or business, mm-hmm. it may be difficult to prove causation. That said, if you can show carelessness and there's, let's say, a cluster of cases arising out of a particular venue, a store, your employer, you will have a prima facie tort case if the employer's precautions didn't conform to a standard known as the reasonable person standard. The employer must take all precautions that a reasonable person who's ordinarily prudent and care and pays due regard to the safety of others would take in these pandemic conditions.
So if there's already a reasonable standard person that is the reasonable person standard that is the standard in tort law already, why is Mitch McConnell so concerned about this? Help me understand the politics of this, because he talks about this every single day. And as this yes. relief bill goes through Congress, you know, it looks like he's willing to give Democrats a lot of what they want on extending unemployment benefits. It looks to me anyway like he's going to give Democrats a lot of what they want finally on helping to fund state and local governments with our coronavirus emergencies, if revenue at the state and local governmental levels. What he keeps coming back to is, I want liability limitations. So if there's a reasonable person standard that's already kind of assumed in tort law, what more is he looking for, and what is it that the Democrats are resisting?
Well, Mitch McConnell, along with almost the entire Republican Party, is hostile to tort liability generally. And that's because they represent business interests, and I don't only mean for-profit businesses, but that includes nonprofits as well, business interests. And business would always prefer to have a to be excused from liability because they would rather capture more of their profits rather than have to invest in safety or pay damage awards. So, I mean, the politics of this, and it is politics from Mitch McConnell, is that he's been, for his entire career, a foe of tort liability, of negligence liability, and this is just an opportunity to push that agenda in a very dramatic context.
So
he's answerable, I should just say, too, he's answerable to donors who really, really, really want this. And
right.
So that's, you know, the black and white of it.
But it wouldn't be that there's never liability. It would be certain protections. So what's your understanding of where the line might be? So if I'm an employer and I'm not, setting up social distancing rules for my employees, maybe that's negligent in a reasonable person kind of way, that I'm not going to be protected even under whatever law Mitch McConnell wants to be passed. Or maybe the line is somewhere else. Help us understand what this would be and not be specifically.
So Mitch McConnell, along with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers, is pressing for limiting liability to situations where there's deliberate or reckless misconduct by an employer or a business, rather than merely careless behavior. And what they want to substitute is a standard that they call good faith, meaning if you did your best, that should be good enough to protect you from any claim that you've acted carelessly from a more objective point of view.
So what's the difference between,
can you
give us a COVID example of where the line
yes.
is between careless and reckless?
Yeah, yes, I can. And I should just say that the problem is very unlikely to be reckless behavior, although that would be, I mean, it's not that that never happens. Reckless behavior would be people are falling sick at your workplace. You're told by regulators or public health officials that they're falling sick because of the way you're operating. You're told that you should operate differently, and you just ignore all of that. That's a clear case of recklessness. It's a willful disregard for people's health. It's closer to setting out to actually infect people. Carelessness would be you, in order to save money, you decide that you're only going to give your employees two masks a week rather than a fresh mask every day.
Hmm.
So a reasonable person of ordinary prudence who is paying attention to safety might well choose to provide fresh PPE on a more regular basis,
mm-hmm.
but somebody who is trying to protect their profits might say, you know, I'm gonna cut a corner on masks.
Let's take some phone calls, because people are calling in with personal situations and with questions on this question of limiting liability for employers when the economy reopens up as a condition of passing a coronavirus relief bill, as Congress is debating lawsuit liability in the COVID era. 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. And Ali in Queens, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for this program. This is, as much disdain as I have for Mitch McConnell, as a business owner, I run multiple pediatric dental and orthodontic offices in the most hard-hit areas in New York City where we serve underserved kids.
Mm-hmm.
As much disdain as I have for Mitch McConnell, I really believe that this is a very important issue for us, because just as it was described, this difference between being reckless and being careless, it's still not clear to me, because the very case of PPEs for us as dentists is a huge problem, because the supply of N95 masks are still limited to this day. And for example, the state has regulated that we need to supply our clinical team members with N95 masks, mm-hmm. and that they need to be fit tested. Yet the whole idea of fit testing an N95 mask requires you to be fitted for a mask that you're going to be able to have a constant supply of, which today is impossible. So is that being reckless, or is that not being careful? You know, it's very, very vague, and it would be very, very helpful considering the lack of reasonable standards and, you know, established recommendations, even by CDC or New York State, for us to be protected when we're out there, you know, risking our lives, essentially, and the lives of our team members in trying to serve the public.
I hear you. So, Ali, thank you very much. Actually, let me go on to another call with another example, and then Professor Feldman will get your analysis. Vincent in Bayville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Vincent. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, my colleagues and I have kicked around the conversation of what if a customer happens to get COVID and they think back of the last interaction they had and maybe one of my guys was in their house. How could it be proven? How could you prove that I brought that into your home? I think it's a tough fight. And then to think that a lawyer would try to, or the law system would try to profit from this pandemic when we really all need to unite and get together here and solve this versus try to profit from it, I think that's criminal in its own testimony. I don't know, Brian, how do you think? We know this was a man-made virus. I feel like that's oversought. And
we don't know that it was a man-made virus, that's for sure. But this is always the political debate. Do we look at lawsuits as a way that the litigation law industry is making money, and so look at it as a matter of greed in that respect? Or do we look at it as a matter of empowering ordinary people to hold companies responsible, even small companies like yours, if they are negligent and wind up harming somebody's health? So, Professor Feldman, interesting two calls so far.
Yes, and both callers raise concerns that I engage with these days, every single day. The first caller, I think I can offer some reassurance to. There's more clarity than the caller may think in a reasonable person standard. The standard, a reasonable person in circumstances like Ali's, no one would adjudge that the reasonable person does the impossible. If masks are not available, the nice thing about the reasonable person standard is even if there's a statute that mandates that someone in Ali's position provide masks, well, Ali couldn't be sued for not providing them if it were impossible to mm-hmm. get the masks. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, the tort law is more respectful of emergency circumstances or difficult circumstances than much statutory law is. I think, you know, so that's to be comforting. I will say, look, every person who ever conducts an activity outside of their house doesn't know if they will act carelessly and get sued. That's sort of, that's the nature of carelessness. It's not that intentional. The point is that just as you should be free to operate your business, other people should be free to go about their business knowing that you're obligated to take precautions. These are two different liberty interests that have to be reconciled. That goes to the second caller's point. And to a phrase you used, there is no litigation law industry. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that could possibly mean. Here's what happens.
Well, there's a trial lawyers association, right?
Yes,
I mean, isn't that an industry that brings lawsuits for a living and obviously yeah. profits if they win?
No, that's an association of lawyers who represent people with a variety of claims that might have to go to trial. But I want to make what you're saying mm-hmm. and what the caller said mm-hmm. actually points to something that those lawyers do which protects people from lawsuits that are unlikely to be successful. So the caller said, what if someone just remembers that my guy was working in their home? If a person contracts COVID-19 and seeks legal representation, and they say, well, so-and-so's employee was in my house, that lawyer is going to ask a lot of questions about where else the potential client has been exposed or could have been exposed to COVID-19, because precisely what the model of many trial lawyers' business is that they only get paid if they can win a case or a settlement.
Right.
And they can't win cases and settlements that you can't prove causation, which is what the caller was talking about. So, in fact, the trial lawyer serves a real gatekeeping function, much more so than, let's say, the lawyers who are advising businesses, small and large, on how to conform to tort standards, because those lawyers charge by the hour. And so they don't get paid only if they protect their clients from liability claims. They're paid no matter what they counsel.
Jacob in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm a public school teacher in New York, and I was just wondering about how these liability laws might extend into the public sector. Because, you know, I was working that last week in March when everything was shutting down, and, you know, the public schools are getting a budget cut, and unless the Congress passes some extra funding, I don't really see how we're going to get the PPE that we need. So I don't know if there's any liability there or how this would apply to that. That's really my question.
Thank you. All right. How about with respect to public schools and a public school teacher and what the system should be required to provide?
Well, schools, the way they operate their facilities vis-a-vis teachers and students on premises, it doesn't matter if it's a public school or a private school. A public school can be held liable in tort. For teachers, if a teacher in a public school is a member of a union affiliate, which most are, unions are working very hard to ensure that their members are not asked to sign any sort of release or waiver of liability. That's how schools will be trying to get a privatized version of immunity. But schools are a good example of a situation where, yeah, unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, public schools across the country are underfunded. However, we're now talking about life and death situations. We want to keep incentives high for school districts to take every reasonable precaution against becoming locuses of infection. So what we want is a set of legal tools which ensure that schools will take reasonable precautions. If the government wanted to heavily, heavily regulate schools and other businesses and then finance and pursue a system for fining or even jailing people who don't take those precautions and create a compensation fund for people who fall ill, mm-hmm. that might be a legitimate alternative to the current tort system. But I don't think that the people pushing for the sort of immunity that you referenced at the beginning of the show, like Mitch mm-hmm. McConnell or what's going on, are going to be lobbying or pushing for that sort of alternative.
Yeah. So last question. To the extent that there's any experience with this in the tort system and the court system at all so far, because it's still so new, is there any sort of hierarchy in following safety regulations that business owners listening right now might adhere to? For example, is a mask mandate a better legal defense than stickers on the floor to indicate social distancing or anything like that?
So that's, I hope that my answer to this will be helpful. This is a really practical question and one I think I can speak to at a generally helpful level, although this is not specific legal representation.
Mm-hmm.
The
disclaimer.
So first of all, the tort system always looks at what regulations were in place and that people have followed. So the first thing employers should do or businesses should do is do their best to comply with all regulations. So if there's a mask regulation or law, whether it be an executive order, statute, an administrative rule, try to follow it. If you can't follow it because the PPE, let's say, isn't available, keep records of the efforts you made to be in compliance. Second, look, custom is also something that is taken into account. So when you're going about your own day and you see what different people are doing to protect people from being too close to one another, to incorporate those ideas into your own behavior. And lastly, take a minute when you are making your decisions and really think about the standard that I described. Are you making a choice that's reasonable when you're squarely thinking about safety, not your own convenience or economic pressures on you, but just safety? And if, from that perspective, a precaution seems wise and you take it, you are doing, not only are you acting in accord with the law, but you are averting liability for yourself.
Free legal advice.
Did I answer your question?
Yes. You heard the disclaimer, everybody. That was not legal advice. but really interesting insights from Heidi Lee Feldman, professor of law at the Georgetown University Law Center, on liability in the COVID era as it is and how Mitch McConnell would like it to be. Thanks so much. We really appreciate all your knowledge on this.
Thanks so much for hearing me out.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.